going on, comic book head? You are listening to another episode of Serious Nerdship Podcast, brought to you by the Raw, Live, and Unedited Podcasting Network. I, of course, am your host, Ayo, Mr. Big Geek. And we got a couple, we have some really good reads for you guys this week. I hope you're ready for some of these titles. I might be late on some of these, but you'll get the gist of it. You'll know what to pick up. You already know. So first of all, let's see, in order, if let me just call it the books I'm going to review, and then from there we'll jump into the first one. From Upshot Comics, we got Archangel 8 number 3. If you guys been keeping up, you know that's one of my favorite books of this year. From Boom Studios, we got Once in Future number 8. Things have been great with that book and shit's just picking up. Marvel Comics, we have Marvel's X number 4. They left us on a cliffhanger in that last one. Let's see where this one takes us. From Image Studios, we got The Goddamned, The Virgin Brides. This is actually the second run of The Goddamned by Jason Aaron and R.M. Guerrero. This was one of my favorite comics that came out that year, I want to say 2017. So this is a continuation to that storyline, and it gets really, really fucking weird. And of course, from DC Comics, we got Deceased Dead Planet, which is now the third chapter in the Deceased line. So if you've been picking up, or if you've been following the show, you know that we started with the Deceased, and then we had Deceased Dead Rising, and now we got Deceased Dead Planet, which takes place a couple years after. So let's just jump into this, man. Let's start off with Once in Future number 8. Now, most times with these books, it tells us where we left off. If you remember, we got this guy who's part of the King Arthur lineage, not really lineage. He's just part of that story. And in this world, whatever you remember that story, it's true. It's just a twisted tale of what people know it by. So in this version, King Arthur's like a sadistic fucking ruler, right? He killed on whim. He did whatever the fuck he wanted. And everyone under, like all the knights of the Round Table, were like rapists, killers. It's a crazy story. And if you've been following, you know that he was supposed to be one of the knights, because he has that butt bloodline, which is Nuke. What's the name of his main character? I forgot his name. But his grandma's the one that put him on game on what he should be doing and what he should get away from, you know. And then we got introduced to his stepbrother Galahad. We find out his mom's part of that evil sect. They're trying to bring King Arthur, who's in like a soul realm, if you will, right? He's trying to carry him over to the real world, and that shit just ain't working out, because this dude found his sword, which is Excalibur, and shit went downhill from there for the bad guys, right? Anyways, Granny and dude, what's this motherfucker's name? God damn it. Hold on, let me find this dude's name real quick. Duncan was his name. Duncan, right? So they're going over what happened in the last issue where they're distracted. They're trying to protect one thing after their fight, because now Duncan's been going. His lady, which is her name is Rose, she's been trained to find where the next event's going to be, like when they're trying to breach our world. Because Granny passed some of her magic over to them for they can. Because they're basically the next generation of what's supposed to stop the evil from coming into our world. Duncan and this girl, Rose, and Granny's training them while she still can. You know, anything can happen. Well, they're distracted in the last mission while they went to go fight somewhere protecting this museum. The target was actually a museum across the street where a manuscript and a helmet was stole. The Granny wasn't really worried about the helmet, but when she found out what manuscript, which is the they stole the Beowulf's manuscript, Granny kind of raised her eyebrows like, shit. And then he's like, what's wrong? She goes, no, nothing really. Remember, Beowulf's just a poem. Poem, story, legend, myth, however you want to call it, right? We cut back where we got King Arthur, who had Galahad, and put him through the trials where he's starting to torture him now for he can be part. When we met Galahad, he was just like a regular dude. I mean, you know, blonde-haired, young guy, and King Arthur's knights don't even resemble what we've heard about in the story, right? They're all like demonic hellraisers, man. They're all fucking creepy looking. So King Arthur wasn't going to take Galahad into his fold just the way he was, you know, human. So he put him on this torture chair where it changed him, which is basically his throne, which he knew what the result would be. Like, no one could sit on King Arthur's throne but King Arthur. That's something that Merlin did, like a curse, right? So it fucked Galahad up. It like, blistered his skin. He's basically one of them now. Now, Arthur's trying to teach him how to live in his pain, how to focus that pain into something else. And while this going down, whoever had that manuscript of Beowulf read it aloud. That was actually the last page of that last book. And we've seen some kind of magic sparkling on this hill, which was supposedly the tomb of Beowulf. So while we get in these panels, King Arthur torturing Galahad, someone, he's talking about, like, don't let your king down. Always remember your king. And in the back, someone yells out, who is king? We turn a panel and we get this big motherfucking hulking dude that's like on fire. And he goes, Beowulf comes to your hall. Who is the king of this hall? And Arthur turns around and yells out, I am Arthur. I am the one who whips the Saxon dogs. And fucking Beowulf yells back, no Saxon am I. And my back is not for scourge bearing. Come if you think you can convince me otherwise. They're like basically calling each other out. These are two fucking legends in the stories we know, right? We got King Arthur and we got Beowulf. And they stare each other down, and not a moment gets wasted after that. They fucking start charging. King Arthur comes down with the blade on Beowulf. But remember, King Arthur's used to swinging Excalibur. This ain't fucking Excalibur. Beowulf fucking traps the sword with his fucking hands, spins it, and fucking knocks, headbutts King Arthur right in his fucking face. King Arthur's like stunned. He's like, fucking dare you lay your hands on me. And Beowulf laughs, and he just, you know, he scorns at him and laughs, and he goes, and King Arthur's pissed at this point. He's like, you're gonna burn. You're gonna fucking burn from this. All of a sudden, a voice yells out, cease. This is not the purpose of this meeting. Of course, we got Merlin back, and he tells him, you were called for a reason. You know, we know who you are. You're brave Beowulf. You know, honey, the honey hero, the beast wanderer. Listen, you know, tragedy stalks the halls of Camelot. And he tells them that their heroes are in dire straits and they need their help because an evil has come over the land and done this to King Arthur. Beowulf doesn't know what the fuck's going on. He knows that he's been summoned here to fight evil. He has no idea that Merlin and King Arthur are the evils himself. So they bring Galahad forth and they tell him, like, and he tells him, look what this evil has done to me. I used to be man. You know, and I'm of your blood, and that's all Beowulf needs to hear. He's like, what dogs did this? Like, point me in the direction. Who is a monster? And then Merlin tells him, a monster and a mother hunt the halls of our fallen heroes, and we're lost. We need your help, Beowulf. Can you save us? Beowulf, like, he's on fire the whole time, right? Like, from his, when he's fighting King Arthur, his whole body was fire. He, like, the Human Torch, you know, but not his legs. But once he's talking and explaining to him what happened, he's trying to, you know, get the gist of what's going on, his flames cease. But when they tell him, you know, there's this monster roaming around fucking up people, that's his fucking story. It reminds him of Grendel. He's like, oh shit, a fucking Grendel's out, like, not on my watch, right? And he tells him, you know, point me to this monster, let them feel the fires of my limbs and this and that. And it says that he's burst into flames. King Arthur steps closer to him. He looks at Merlin, and Merlin, like, gives him a lot of, like, you know what you have to do. So King Arthur goes closer, and he goes, we thank you, Lord Beowulf. We thank you. And he goes, Lord, please. And he sends Beowulf on his way. And then King Arthur looks at Merlin, like, what's going on? I'm kind of confused. He's like, it'll become clear. Just, you know, he thinks that he's going to do our dirty work, not knowing the better. Let him do the fucking dirty work. And then King Arthur gives him a fucking glance and he goes, Merlin, you know, don't test me. He goes, I know what you're not and I know what you are. He goes, I know you know, Lord. I know you know. We cut back to Duncan and his grandmother trying to strategize, trying to figure out what's really happening. While they're on this hill figuring out what their next move is, they're being tracked or followed by, it looks like, Duncan's mother or one of her followers. Now, remember, she's part of that sect that's trying to bring them back. So she throws out these, like, magical sticks, and they write out for, it says, good awaits the all-knowing, you know, my good awaits my contact. Hell is here. Here is hell. And then she goes, what if Galahad, and the sticks, it has to be his mom now. The sticks rearrange itself and they disappear. So Duncan and his grandma get back in the car. They call Rose and they're telling her, hey, what's our next mission? Did anything come up? And she's like, I haven't tried the magic. And she throws the pins down on the map to figure out. And she asks him, well, where are you guys right now? And they tell him, well, we're basically on this road driving back from the museum and stuff. And she goes, well, something's not right. Something about your location is not right. And then the grandma goes, what do you mean? She goes, guys, something's coming your way. Something big, something magical, something strong. And the grandma's like, what the hell you say? And you get this panel of fucking Beowulf coming down on their fucking truck, landing on top of it, smashing through the top with his fucking burning fist, punching a hole through the top of this car. And Granny doesn't waste any time. She has a fucking automatic weapon on her. She starts unloading on Beowulf. He backs up. He don't know what the fuck bullets are. He just knows these things burn. So, but still, they're not fuck with him. He opens the top more and he looks at him. He goes, I see you. And fucking Duck is scared out of his way. He's like, what the fuck is this? And she goes, Beowulf. And he's like, that's right. He rips off the top of their fucking car, looks down and says, Beowulf has you now. And Duncan looks at Grandma and says, see, this is where you say that I was right. He's not just a poem. And that's where that issue ends. I said it before. I'm going to keep telling you guys, don't sleep on Once in Future. Writers, Kerryon Gillen, who was writing one of my favorite runs of the X-Men a couple years back. Artist is Dan Mora. Don't sleep on this book. 8 issues in. Go find the first trade, which has the first 5 issues, and catch yourself up. Okay, now here we go. Marvel's X number 4. This is by Alex Ross and Jim Kruger. Now, if you guys remember Marvel's X, I don't want to say what if. It's another version of Earth where everyone on a planet has superpowers. Everyone. We still got our heroes. We still got Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, Hulk. But there's no more humans. Everyone has power, so pretty much no one's special anymore, right? And if you remember the beginning of the books, the first couple, I think 1 and 2, it tells you that they think Reed Richards was behind this. This is pretty much the prequel to that Alex Ross joint that came out fucking 15, 20 years back. It's a great fucking read. I still recommend that. And this is telling us how we got there. And we're following this kid, David, who, out of everyone in, well, we're in New York right now, everyone in the world, as far as we know, have powers. But this one kid. So Reed Richards finds out about this and he sends heroes to go, not hunt him down, that sounds fucked up, just to bring him in for they could run tests. You know, maybe he's a cure, maybe he can give them the answers they need on to why people why this happened to everybody on Earth. So it actually gives us a little, tells us what's going on. So here we go. Marvel's X number 4. In a world that will come to be known as Earth-X, there goes the Earth-X storyline, a mysterious plague has given everyone superpowers and chaos runs rampant. A young boy named David is the last ordinary human on Earth, and his only hope of survival is tracking down what remains of Earth's superheroes. After seeking help from his heroes, David and Spider-Man were attacked by a mutated Kraven the Hunter. Kraven kidnapped David, revealing Captain America's head mounted on his wall, while Spider-Man sought Daredevil's help to rescue him. That's where we got the reveal, because Daredevil's the first guy, well, it was Daredevil and a version of Ghost Rider. They're the first ones to find David, but because of his extra senses, Daredevil knew that someone was following him. Someone or something, he just couldn't make it out. It was someone familiar, but someone not familiar. and we found out that it was Kraven the Hunter, part man, part lion. Looks fucking awesome, man, right? He got David, and he kidnapped him, took him into the sewers, and that's where he showed David, like, all his souvenirs, people he's been hunting, and one of them was a Captain America head, which fucking demoralized David. He's like, all hope is lost. Captain America was his hero, was the main man. He looked up to all of them, but he, you know, without Captain America, all is lost, is what he's thinking. And Kraven's telling him, hey, there's only one reason I sought you and found you. You know, you're basically the last of your kind on this planet. Like, you're like a rare, the rarest of the fucking rare, an endangered species. And it's only right for someone like him, Kraven. Just looking at the image of him mutated like a lion, it looks fucking awesome. Basically, he's saying, you know, if anyone's going to have you, it's going to be me. You know, it's only my right to mount you on my wall. Like, he saw him to release him, hunt him, and kill his ass. That's what he wants with David, right? He doesn't give a fuck about the cure. He actually likes his new form. You know, he's powerful now. You know, he doesn't have to worry about getting his ass handed to him by Spider-Man, Daredevils, or superheroes like that. He's actually a mutant now. So while he's telling him this, David's telling him, like, I don't believe that's Captain America. There's been many people who've taken on the name Captain America that can't be who it is. And he goes, oh, believe me, he was a hard hunt, is what Kraven tells him. He goes, but there he goes. There he goes on my wall, mounted. You know, this is not a joke. I'm not playing with you. This is what's going to happen. One of the cool things that I like about when David and Kraven are having this conversation, because David has no idea who this is, you know. He's heard of the name, but he's never met him. So he asks him, like, who are you? Like, who do you, why would you kill Captain? He goes, let me explain to you who I am, you know. I once was the hunter, you know, Sergei Kravenov, Kraven perhaps, you know. He goes, it's kind of a cruel irony that I become the very beast I once hunted. If you guys remember Kraven's original look, he had that lion mounted on his chest kind of outfit going on, right? Now he and himself is a lion. Well, so while he's going, him and David are in sewers going through their talking, you know, we go back to the panels where Spider-Man, he's trying to list some heroes, and he runs into Luke Cage, and he tells him, this kid, we need to find this kid. You know, Daredevil's out there on the hunt, but I need a powerhouse. I need someone like you. And Luke Cage basically explains him, you know, there's a powerhouse everywhere you go nowadays. You know, what am I good for? He's all, because I know you got a good heart. I know you do the right thing. Cage agrees with them. They shake hands. They're on the way to go look for David. While Spider-Man starts going around the city, I don't know if you guys remember, I think it was the second issue when David actually made it to New York, because he came out of New York City, New York. He came out of one of the suburbs, one of the other boroughs, I don't remember which one. When he got there, there was all these, I don't want to say heroes, but people with newly found powers fighting this giant, like a big motherfucker. He was a big, and they're just fighting him just to fight him. You know, that a lot of the heroes couldn't understand, but they can't get involved because these fucking people have powers too, so they just let it go at it. The reason I bring that up, because in the background when we see Spidey swinging through New York, you see that giant, like, impaled on the Empire State Building. It looks fucking crazy. So if you're wondering what happened to the giant from that second book, he dead. So anyways, once Daredevil starts looking around, he's the one closest on David's trail. He knew that Reed Richards is not a stupid man. So if anyone's going to be with him or following him or in disguise to see if they got some kind of different agenda, of course Reed would send Sue. So not remembering his powers, I guess, and he tells her, like, Sue, I know you're here. You know, you got to remember my senses can sense anything, you know, especially your heartbeat. Just show yourself and let's go do this together. Sue shows up, and then she's all, are you okay? I'm sorry I didn't mean to do this like this, but Reed thought it was best. I know what Reed's trying to do. Let's just go find this kid, right? So they're all on the lookout for him, and David just can't get his, cut back to David and Kraven inside the sewers, and David can't get his head, or he can't take his eyes off this mounted Captain America head that's just on Kraven's wall. And while he's looking at this thing crying, he's wiggling his hands trying to get out of his rope because he knows that he doesn't have much time to live. He actually wiggles through, He starts walking around Raven's den, and he sees a lot of his weapons. He used to use his knife, some of his gun, and then he finds his sharpshooter gun, right? His rifle with a scope. David gets it, slowly cocks it, starts walking around looking to see if he can find Kraven. And as he gets closer, Kraven talks out to him. He goes, "Child, did you not think I would not know you're here? You know, I'm part line now. I can fucking smell you. Smell your moves, smell your sweat, whatever, which way you turn, I'm on it. Like, you know, you should have pulled the trigger when you had the chance." There was a quick second when David was looking at Kraven, just making sure, like, this used to be a man, can I do this? That's what Craven's referring to. So once Kraven starts to pounce on him, like, you know, I'm on this kid. It's his fucking monologue, and it gets him in trouble while he's going off and telling David what he should have done or shouldn't have done. David gets his hand on the rifle that fell out, pulls it around, lets one shot off. Hits Raven and shorty pops back, and he's all, you're a fool. You don't think you can win this. You can shoot me 10 more times, you know, my newly found powers. I'll be able to stop you. I'll take the damage. It's not a big thing. And David tells him, I don't care. You know, what do you want me to do? He goes, hide. Find a place to hide. Make this hunt more interesting. And David tells him, hide. You're fucking crazy. What do you mean hide? At that same time, all these boulders start fucking flying to Raven's head. And he looks up, and it's Spider-Man. He's found him. Right away, he doesn't waste any time. He starts shooting all these webs thick and starts going after where Kraven's at. But this whole time, spoiler alert, here we go. David wasn't his target, man. He knew Spider-Man or Daredevil will be after him, most likely Spider-Man, because it's Kraven who took him. This has been a plot the whole time for Kraven to Ray fucking to bring Spider-Man in. Spider-Man's the one that fucked his whole life up. You know, embarrassed him countless of times. Put him in jail. Whatever, all the shit he does. And this is all a trap that Kraven set up. That's it, Raven? Kraven set up just to get Spidey. Because as soon as Spidey's tried to swing around where he opens a hole that was there, I guess, there's fucking barbed wire everywhere, and Spidey lands right in the middle of that shit. He is caught in this sharp barbed wire on his wire, and is ripping him up. And the more he moves, the more the razors click in. Well, Spidey sees David in distress, and he has the rifle pointed at Kraven. So David, don't shoot. Hold on. And he goes, and that's when Kraven yells out, "Blood wire gets to you closer every time you struggle. So keep struggling, little spider. Keep struggling and make this so pleasing for your old foe." And Spider-Man's like, "All this. You did all this because of me." And then Dave's all, "Don't worry, Spidey. I got him in my sights. I'll take him out." And he goes, "No." Spidey explains to him, like, "We don't do this. The heroes don't do this. You know, I know you don't have any powers, but just because you can't kill him don't mean you should." And then that's when Kraven goes, "Oh, 100% he should. Because if not, I'm going to kill his ass. I'm going to kill him and kill you while you're hanging from this wire." And David just yells out, "All I wanted was to be a hero. That's all I wanted." And then he goes, "Well, be a hero and pull the trigger. Save both your lives." So now you're kind of getting like, okay, was it really a trap, Spider-Man? Was he really trying to hunt the last human on Earth? What is it? Turns out it's something completely different. And I'm not going to spoil that for you because I thought it was pretty fucking cool. While Kraven's yelling at David to do quotes the right thing, and he's crying, David knows. He goes, "He killed Cap. I have to take him out. He killed Cap. Spidey, you'll forgive me for this." And Kraven's yelling at him, "Do it. Do what you're meant to do, you know." And I don't want to give a little bit more into that. There's a couple panels going into what's really going on, but it's gonna kill it for you guys, you know. And I want you guys to buy this fucking book. And he goes, "He killed Cap." Close his eyes, get ready to pull the trigger, and then there's a voice from behind that says, "He didn't kill Captain America, because I'm right here." He looks up, and Captain America, Steve Rogers, coming down from the same hole Spider-Man was at, but he's not alone. He's got a horde of heroes. We got the Human Torch. We got Iron Man. We got Vision, Hawkeye, Ben Grimm, Hercules. They're all there to get David from this immediate threat. At that same time, Craven's plans are foiled. So he's like, I'm not gonna let you guys run away that easy. Let me at least try to get one of these motherfuckers. Wasn't paying attention that Spider-Man was cut loose from the barbed wire. Got close enough to Kraven. When he was on the charge, he hit him with all he got. Knocked his ass out. While the rest of the people get David, half of the crew gets David. Half of the crew's attended to Spider-Man. He's bleeding out, so they're doing all they can to help him. They get David, and they tell him, we need to take you where you belong. We need to take you where the only person on this earth can help you. We need to take you to Reed Richards. They journey on their way, and we get a panel with some of the heroes in the alley talking about what they're going to do before they take David or Reed Richards. As they start to get into it, talk about what's best for David, and he's on the way to see Reed Richards. In the background, Hercules just listening. He's shaking his head and starts to walk around. He goes, I know all the hopes are on the boy, but even if he holds a curl, the cure, it's not gonna restore the world the way it was. The age of gods and marvels is over. I know the fates too well. As he walks off into the dark. End of issue 4, and issue 5 will be the next chapter. I'm loving this fucking book, man. Highly recommend. I'm going to finish that out for you guys once that comes in. I hope you've been reading it yourself. It's something that... And I didn't want to give that spoiler, because if you didn't read that book, then that's something nice waiting for you in the back of that book. Just go ahead and pick it up and read for yourself. All right, let's go with an indie. Let's go with Upshot Comics Art Angel 8, 3 of 4. This has been one of my favorite fucking books this year. Where you're kind of starting to get the feeling that these people, these assassins, these drug runners, some of them aren't who the other people think they are, who you believe they are. You kind of, there's like a supernatural feel now to this. We know that this dude used to be an angel, or used to work for the angels, or should I say the fallen angel. The title kind of gives that away. You figure it's a nickname till you see something at the end of issue 2 that had you like, holy shit, right? Then we get the mess that we found them in on when they met up at the bridge. So now we get the main character, who's his name, god damn it, Sergeant something, Delmar. No, Delmar's a drug runner he's been trying to get. This is Sergeant Mike? God damn it, I'm sorry, dude. Give me one sec. Dude really doesn't have a name. I know he goes by number 8. That's how they know him. He has a meeting with the dude in the graveyard. If you guys don't remember what this is, pretty much it's... how do I explain this at this point? It's pretty much their angel and their hitmen. And like I said, it could be the fallen angels, could be, and there's like a good, the good and the evil, the ones who stayed neutral during the whole holy wars and all this and that. That's what this book was, if you remember. Now they're starting to get more involved with what's going on Earth, and it's having an impact on both heaven and hell. This book, actually, the best way I can describe it, if you're a fan of Punisher, you're a fan of Hellblazer, it's like Hellblazer meets Punisher, right? It's the best way I can explain this book. When he has a meeting at this graveyard, one of the suits who himself, you kind of have a feeling just by their dialogue alone that he, of course, knows about not only the war going on now, but the wars of old. Like, either he was in them, he was around, and took notes. Something happens where he's familiar with all this. Well, he's explaining number 8. I know you're out for Michael. He's starting all this shit with the Delmar character was the drug lord who number 8 was sent to go talk to protect them. And Delmar didn't trust nobody. He's a drug addict, a drug runner. He's like one of the cartel dudes. They don't trust fucking nobody. Well, anyways, while they're talking about what's going on and try to tell, and this agent's trying to tell number eight, just try to stay out of Michael's way, who we all should know by now would be the Archangel Michael. I'm thinking number eight's one of the other fallen angels. We haven't really got there yet, but I'm sure it's coming. He tells him, well, not only that, now you got to worry about the bad guys. Number eight looks at the dude and like, bad guys? He goes, bad guys from the other side. That right there, that line is what led me, that right, it's all I needed. I'm like, okay, they're angels from heaven, there's angels from hell, or the fallen angels. And when he means the bad guys from the other side, I'm thinking demons, creatures from hell, right? Which we haven't really seen of. Up to this point in the comic, but some shit happens. Anyways, some of Del Mar's drug runners are waiting for a drop spot when they're ambushed by Michael. And he goes and he's going after them and he takes all their stuff. He's trying to get Del Mar's attention and they all think it's number eight. So number eight knows where Del Mar's held up. He went from one of the last raids. He kept one of the guys alive. And he got enough information to find him. Well, Del Mar's like in the middle of this golf course, like surrounded by like 30 bodyguards, right, while he's golfing. And number eight pulls out of the fucking middle of this golf course, and he's surrounded by everybody. And then Del Mar's like, are you fucking crazy? You know, you killed my man, all this and that. I have 30 guns on you. Like, who the fuck are you? Like, who do you think you are? And number eight tells him, I'm a friend. I was sent to come help you, but your dumbass tried to kill me, and you're still trying to kill me. And Del Mar's like, 'cause I don't fucking trust anybody, you know. And who says I need a friend? You know, all I need to do is put a bullet back your head, and then you won't be a nobody. He goes, yeah, you do that, and then you're pretty much fucked. You know, there's things that way worse than me that are coming for you, and I need to help you prepare for it. And that's when Del Mar starts to listen. He goes, okay, you know what, from what you're saying and what you've done to my man, I'll take my chances with you, right? So that pretty much telling him I'll listen. So they're in Del Mar's getaway house, and I think that's where number eight really breaks down everything that's been going on. I don't think he tells him about the heaven and hell shit, right? But tells him who's after him, and anyone around him now is not going to be able to stop him. That's why he was sent. We turn to a panel where we're at some kind of whorehouse, right? And in there's like a madam. She's serving up her girls, two guys. And she has a new girl working for her this night. And if you don't know by the panel, but you see a dude like, you know, dick in hand, getting ready to jack off while she's on her way to him. And we recognize this is the girl who's been, or the woman, the woman assassin who had her sights on number eight, try to kill him. But Michael didn't allow it. This is pretty much Michael's right hand or top assassin, you know, and she's out here at one of Del Mar's brothels putting in work, killing everybody inside, not just the Johns, like the customers, but the workers too. She gets to a point where she finds a couple of the girls, like especially the madam, like beat up and trying to say something like, be careful, like trying to stutter, and she's like, and she's covered in blood. She's killed a lot of these motherfuckers in this brothel when she gets to this room. She's like, what the fuck? Who did this? And out of the behind, from behind her, someone yells at me, hits her square in her jaw, takes her out. We cut to a panel where we get her hanging upside down in the middle of the fucking forest on this tree. And number eight splashing water in her face, telling her, good morning, sunshine. And he tells her, you know how this works. I ask you some questions, you give me some answers. And she's hanging upside down from the tree with her nothing but her bra and her panties, right? And she's tied behind her back. She's tied by the ankles to a tree, to the one of the tree trunks. And he tells her, you know, first thing I want to know, and be honest, how does a renegade angel with the death wish come to connect with someone like you? She looks at him for a while and she smiles. She goes, huh. So you figured me out. In that case, no sense in wasting the effort. She closed her eyes, opened them back up, and there it is. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. We have a fucking demon on our hands. She shows her eyes, which just looks like snake eyes, and he's like, why? Why are you working with a fallen angel? Like, why are you doing this? Like, what's fucking going on? And she smiles. She's like, you think I'm going to just tell you this shit? Like, you know, I'm here to fucking stir shit up. You know, I don't give a fuck what you guys do to each other, just as long as I get to do my dirt, too. And then he's like, well, you know, you still haven't given me the reason. You know, are you a soldier? Are you a leech? She goes, we're all soldiers, you know. I mean, the three of us, we all share that we're soldiers. You know, don't try to pretend you're not. I'm just here to tell you that I've seen a lot, you know, a lot of wars through the centuries, a lot of tours leading nowhere, a lot of shit that never ends up doing anything. She goes, but with Michael, things are starting to change. And he's like, huh, is that right? So you're the thing that's supposed to change Michael's fortune. And she just smiles. He goes, I'll take that as a yes. He starts to walk off. Or there's an explosion, I think, at one point. There's a boom towards where the camp, where Delmar and his people were. And then she's like, well, you know, Michael, he has some special plan for you. And that's when the explosion goes off. Boom, boom, more. And he turns around. She goes, oh, what can that be? And who can that be? Number 8 takes off, jumps in his drive, starts taking off. That's when we get the girl, the demon, flip. It looks crazy. Like, she does this thing where she reaches up to her legs, pulls the hands that are tied behind her back to the front where she can untie herself, breaks down. She goes, oh, this is getting fun. While he digs, number 8 takes off in the car, she's right on his fucking heels. But he's hitting it. You know, he's gunning to where the spot was, where Delmar and her people was held up. And he gets there, and he starts to look around, and there's just nothing but fucking bodies. And he's looking around, and he's talking to himself, like, what do you have planned? What is all this? And he steps up closer, and he sees a man sitting there with something in his hand. As he gets closer to the man, you see his face is in the shadow. But once he's out of the shadow, you get the face revealed. This man has been sliced in his head 3 ways. It looks fucking crazy. And then in the middle of one of those slits, not only his hand, he has a card. And the card reads, Though one may be overpowered, two could defend themselves. A lord of 3 stands is not quickly broken. Or a cord of 3 strands is not quickly broken. God damn it. And it's a passage from the Bible, it sounds like, right? Number 8 goes, okay, Michael, message received. And that is the end of that issue. We get a little sneak of issue 4. But you guys are just going to have to wait. Pretty goddamn cool book, man. All right, so now, The Goddamn The Virgin Brides by Jason Aaron and R.M. Guerrero. Okay, so Archangel is written by Michael Morrissey, penciled by C.P. Smith, and Snakebite Cortez, love that fucking name. The Goddamn, so if you remember the story of The Goddamn, the first run, we dealt with like cavemen, right? Or certain cavemen, and you knew that a couple of them were worse, more special than the other. Like, these guys were like straight up running around, like, you know, still didn't know what the fuck fire was. Caveman, but there was this story built around it, which was pretty fucking cool. Now we get this second run of The Goddamn, and this shit just, once I read it, it pulled me the fuck in. I was a big fan of the first one, but this is going in a totally different direction. Well, you know what, now I might have to go back and read those books to see if I missed something, because this is going somewhere else. We get back to wherever the fuck this period was, didn't really tell us. But back in the caveman days, let's do that, right? Where you see these kids, you know, in face paint. They're going through this garden of herbs. They're picking flowers, doing what they can. And then you get an army that's marching down a hill. An army back then, right? Which consists of about maybe 20 people. And all this army is nothing but females. They're walking around with their titties hanging out. They all look butch like a motherfucker. Like, they up there in them hills fucking each other. I don't know, whatever it is. You know, I hate on it. You know, you do you. And they're coming down to see the old woman of the village. And I guess they got some kind of deal going on where when a child's ready to ascend, to let them know. And when they say ascend, pretty much if a kid in this camp they have in this village if they have a period, they take these kids up into the mountains to ready them for their God, right? It's what they tell you. One such case is where we get a young girl. She can't be more than 13, 14 years old, right? They see her. She's all dressed in flowers. There's this whole ceremony where they pass her through everybody in the village and meet this army of Amazon women, it looks like, right? The women take her. They say their goodbyes to the village. She waves goodbye. She smiles. Lets them know she's going to be in a better place. She walks up with the women. They're walking up towards the top of the mountain, and she's feeling like closer to God. And they bring her up to this cliff. Kind of reminds me of, just to paint that picture for you guys, of the cliff where Rafiki lifts Mufasa. And at the end, Mufasa comes down and does his lion roar. And then the lions are back and everything's saved. It looks exactly like what's it called? Pride Rock. Pride Rock. They take this bitch up to Pride Rock, right? The woman warrior takes her there and says, all you need to do is stay here and be quiet. You know, all would be revealed. And she's standing up on this rock. She's looking at all the women warriors. They back up slowly and they stay stuck. They're like maybe 30 feet away and they're just watching, you know, like, but on guard. It's weird. And she's like, well, I'll be here. I'll wait for my Lord. You know, these flowers are here for my Lord. And as she starts talking, she notices light behind her. The clouds start shuffling around and you see these beam of light start coming out from the clouds. Like if they're opening up for a sunny day. This is where shit gets interesting. As she's looking, she's like, oh my God, it's everything I've always told, always believed, or what I believed. It's everything I've hoped for. As she's looking at, we don't know what she's looking at, but she's in fucking awe. She's amazed by what she's seeing. And while she's doing her prayers and saying this and that, she knew this was the right thing, that she feels closer to this God. Tears are coming down her eyes. She's like, in a state of, I mean, this is like what their lives are. They're brought here for this reason. I thought it was a sacrifice thing, but oh, does it turn out to be something different? Anyway, while she's there praising her God or the thing that's coming through these clouds, we see her body slowly lifted up on the ground. You see her feet dangling, and I'm like, okay. At that moment, she rises up into the clouds. We don't see anything else. We just hear her scream. And there's a passage that said, and where I got to read it. It's pretty cool. All right, it starts right here. The light burned Lillian's eyes, but she couldn't look away, especially once she saw him. Descending from the clouds on wings of fire, clothed only in radiance, more beautiful than everything she had ever beheld. Her husband, her holy betrothed, he reached down for her. That's where she's looking at this thing, and you see her get lifted off the ground. She felt her whole body come alive at his touch. He lifted her into the air, pulled her close, his eyes searing into hers, her eyes looking right into his. We're not seeing this. We're just getting this. We see her, what she's experienced, but we don't know what's happening. And in the arms of an angel, she was a virgin no more. And that's where the scream started. Down in the hill to the girls, the younger girls who are remembering their friend and wondering how good her life must be right now. In the middle of this conversation, one of the ladies there notices and they stop working. So she puts a bead down on them, right? They bring the girls up and line them up and they scold them about how women should be. And just all they have to do is just live life to the time they ascend, till they're ready. Basically, till they have their period and they can have kids, which is a crazy part of this fucking story. Anyways, they're wondering before they go to bed, what really happens when they go up there. And I guess because of talking about it, when they fall asleep, one of the girls, who's basically our main character of this book, she has a dream. Her name's Sherry. She has a dream where she goes and looks what happens to the virgins who go up the hill, and all she sees is a trail of blood. It's blood, blood, blood. And she's like, what is this? What are our Lord supposed to be up this up there? What is this? And once hands start coming out from the ground, they start grabbing her and there's more blood, and she wakes up. It was all a dream. Her friend wakes up and say, you were shaking, like something's up, like are you okay? And she goes, I gotta know what's going on up the hill. So she goes, can you come with me? It's her friend. It's Sherry and Lillian. Sherry doesn't want to. And Lillian's all, just please, we got to know what's going on. She goes, okay, we'll sneak out. We'll come back. As they start walking up, they see the lights where the princesses are, the warrior princesses. And they walk by a room where one of the ladies or girls they remember when they were younger than this is now a woman, and she's pregnant. She's on this rock. There's other, like, the maidens there that are helping her have the baby. And this lady's screaming. And they hear something behind them. Sherry does. Lillian keeps looking. Sherry turns around, and she sees her friend standing on the ledge. You know, this is the girl earlier, the virgin who was took by a guy. And she sees her, and she calls out to her. She's like, what are you doing? Like, we came to get you. And the girl tells her, what the Lord has brought together, let no one put asunder. She goes, she turns around, and she goes, what are you talking about? Can you look at me? We're here to save you. The girl turns around, and her face is, like, full of blisters. She has smoke coming out of her head. It looks like she was shot in the face with a fucking laser gun. And she goes, run, Sherry. For all the good it will do, run. And she's like, holy shit. So they start to take off. And as they're passing by, the lady who just gave birth, her baby is saved, but her body is given to something else. And as they look closer, there's all these little creatures, right? Some of them have three arms. They're all disfigured. They all look like monsters. And they go, babies feed now. And they give this lady who just had a baby, they give her the body to these things. And they start eating this shit, right? And they're like, what the hell is this? These are supposed to be the babies of the brides that have been taken up the hill. So, who is the father, right? You're looking at these things. They look like demons, but then they look something else. They look like aliens. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Anyways, Sherry and Lillian run back down, try to get in bed before their notice, and they get there in time. Feels like just an hour passes by when they're starting to wake up, and she goes to her and asks her, you know, Sherry, you okay, you know, about last night? She thought, let's not talk about it. Let's just pretend it never happened. She goes, okay. And she goes, well, won't you get out of bed? She goes, I want to, but wait till everyone leaves. She goes, why? Everyone leaves the room. She pulls the cover back. She's had her period. There's blood all over the bed. Sherry looks at her and goes, fuck. And that's when she looks back at Lillian and says, we have to run. And that's how that issue ends. They got to go. She's got, knowing that she's had her period, they're going to take her up the hill. And this motherfucking thing, whatever it is, has been having babies with all these other women or kids. It's pretty much her turn. And that's fucking creepy as shit. Especially when you see, how they're drawn, these creatures, you're like, what the fuck is that? You know what I'm saying? So it's something they believe to be God. But like I said, it's a whole, they went a whole different direction with it. And I'm fucking feeling it. So yeah, recommend the goddamn The Virgin Brides. If you get a chance, go find a trade for the first run of the goddamn. It's pretty fucking cool. I absolutely recommend that. Alright, so let's get into my book of the week. Archangel was, and number 8 was great. So was my, all these books I read were fucking good, but this one just stood out. This is DC Comics Deceased Dead Planet number 1. If you remember, this had a few variant covers. I got the one where it's Batman is like half zombie, and the background is like a howling Batman zombie. It's a pretty fucking cool cover. Right when you get to the pages of the first one, it pretty much lets you know what happened in the first two arcs, what happened with the deceased, how Cyborg carried this virus and turned everyone into these mindless monsters, and all the heroes that died, and all the heroes who are people who were saved, the people who were stranded. And then we move on from that panel, and then we find ourselves at the Oblivion Bar, which is a place where a lot of the magical beings hang out, like Zatara, what's his fucking name? Constantine and his people. And he's looking around and he's talking to people. And Zatanna's like, having drinks on yourself again? He's like, no. Open your eyes, use your magic and see. And it's a lot of their dead comrades, like their souls. They're all there drinking together, which is pretty fucking cool. Anyway, we cut back to Earth where we see a zombie Wonder Woman. Now, you remember Wonder Woman was last seen where she was taken out by fucking Mary Marvel when she found out she had the power of Shazam, but she used it when they needed it the most. And she basically ran Wonder Woman away. Well, now it's been years and Wonder Woman's found it's that same time where she's trying to recover, lick her wounds. She sees the head of Cyborg talking, communicating with some. And she goes up to the head and starts pulling it apart, and she yells out, "Everything dies," and just pretty much tosses it like nothing happened. 5 years go by, right? And we see Cyborg's head trying to communicate with something. He's sending out code to somewhere out in the universe, right? And you see this code flying throughout the page. We turn to the panel, we get a vision of Earth 2 with Superman flying in. And if you remember the last book, our Superman, our Clark Kent, was killed by his son, Connor Kent, who had to take his dad out to save the rest who were fleeing from the planet. So the Superman we're looking at now is Connor Kent. So this is pretty fucking cool. This is his son grown up. He is a man. He is the next Superman. And they find this wreckage flown through space, and they're trying to check it out, right? We got him and a couple of the other members of the newly formed Justice League. And Connor calls out to Batman. "Batman, where are you? We're going to need some of your detective work on this." Cut to a panel where you see Batman already in the halls telling him, "I've breached inside. There's something here besides us." And he gets attacked by this monster. But, you know, Batman's Batman. A couple of tricks up his sleeve. Does this, does that. Takes a monster out. And then he goes, "The board's been clear. You can bring anybody." And that's when we get Connor yell out through the mic, "Thank you, Damian." So we get Damian Wayne grown up in the bat suit. If you remember, I think it was Batman 666 is where we first get a future glimpse of Damian in the bat suit. God damn, it took me a while to hunt that book down, and I fucking love it. I actually found a second copy that I'm going to actually put up on my wall soon. And that's our first, like I said, our first glimpse of Damian in the bat suit growing up. And he was a bad motherfucker. This is a totally different Damian. More wiser, not too, you know, he got to spend more time with Batman, so he took on a lot of the traits of Bruce Wayne, knew his dad was a hero, and he's trying to live up to the mantle of the Batman, just like Connor's trying to live up to the mantle of Superman. Now they're on the Justice League together. So that's something, as a comic book geek, to see these two grown up in their father's place, it's pretty fucking cool. While they're in the ship, they know there's life forms there, and they find, like, these aliens, and they're telling them, "Tell us your story, and we'll tell you ours." They basically run down everything that's been happening, why they're there, and why they're seeking help from other people, right? After that, they get their story. They tell them, "We'll let you be on your way. We're going to go to our space," which is floating in the middle of space, right above the dead Earth, which is kind of scary if you think about it, because Wonder Woman's down there. You know, she's stupid powerful. All she has to do is fly up and cause some shit, but I guess they got the grounds covered. We still got some of the original heroes. We still got the Green Arrow. We still got Canary, who's, if you kept up with the last story, she actually got the Green Lantern ring, and herself became a Green Lantern protector of this universe, right? They're going through the plans of how they started looking for other planets, not wait on Earth to get cleansed, right? And that's when they hear the beep. You know, the communication has been sent out by Cyborg, and they said, "We have to go back to Earth." And they're deciding, well, we can't, you know, there's zombies everywhere. We're gonna end up running into people we couldn't save, and that's gonna fucking just be too much for some of us. But a couple of team members decide to go, which is Hawkwoman, we get the Green Arrow, we get the new Green Lanterns, Connor and Damian and Batman, Superman. They come down, and they actually, Kilowog is with them now, you know, so he's come to help on the things that happen in his universe. And then we get a grown, what was her name? She is the new Wonder Woman now, but she was Wonder Woman's little trainee. I forget her name. So sorry for that if you're yelling at me right now. She's now part of this group, and she is now involved with someone in this group, which you're going to find out later. Well, they get to where the signal is, and they find Cyborg's head, and he's telling them, you know, can't, you know, and they go, "It's okay. We know, you know, some of you still in there. We'll do what's best. Like, pretty much put you out of your misery." But he's not saying can't. His words straight down. He says cure. They fucking stop in their tracks. They're like, cure? And he shakes. Well, he can't shake his head, but he looks at Superman again and he yells, cure. Connor seeing this says, holy shit, we can cure the remaining heroes or remaining people on Earth. You know, Victor's found a way. So they get his body in his head and they start transporting up. But Cassie's her name, right? The next Wonder Woman. She has her reservations because, if you remember, Cyborg's the one that started this shit. You know, something was put in them where if you're anywhere on, you know, on your cell phone, whatever, you get this disease like by technology. So they still kind of blame him for that. So she's like, it might not be a good idea. Let's just, and they're like, well, it's Cyborg. We're gonna have to, you know, we gotta take our chances. And they fly off. Anyways, while they're doing that, a ship pulls up to see, you know, what's going on. And, of course, we get Lex Luthor, who's pretty much their leader now. Someone they look up to. He pretty much turned, like, into a good guy in this universe. So Connor's real close to him. It's like his father figure. He basically, Lex stepped into Superman's shoes as a father to help raise Kent with the mom, what the fuck, Lois Lane, right, on their spaceship. Well, he's down there now. They're trying to, since they found Cyborg, they're wondering, well, there might be more survivors. So they're like in this like a AT-AT walker kind of thing, right? They're scumming the surface, and all of a sudden, boom, it gets fucking hit. And Connor hears it from where he's at. He's flying up. He's on my way. They go, something hit up something big, and he's all, stay there, I'm coming for you, I got you, no worries. And they're calling out for everybody, and they're calling out, hey, who's around, who survived? Like, Lex, are you in there? We cut to a full fucking panel. Of course, Black Canary, the Green Lantern, is looking for Ollie. He was on the ship, too. We cut to the panel where we see what hit them. It's the zombified Wonder Woman, and she has her hand pushed through Ollie's heart. She's ripping his teeth out with her fingers. He's fucking and ripping her other, putting her other finger into his head. She's a strong motherfucker. She's pretty much crushing his skull while Black Canary looks on in horror, and Wonder Woman's there smiling. She knows what she's doing. She's spreading the virus. Canary's a Green Lantern, but still has her power. So when she lets out that fucking scream, it hits Wonder Woman. She goes flying. As she tries to go attack Wonder Woman, we see Green Arrow, Ollie, get up, and he is no longer who he used to be. My man is now a fucking zombie, and now he's on the attack. Doesn't matter. Green Lantern goes after Wonder Woman and yelling at her, how could you? You know who you are. How could you? You know, but this Wonder Woman, she's a zombie. All she cares about is fucking spreading the anti-life equation, right? Infect as much people as she can. That's why they're built. That's what's in them. They can't change that. So while she's fucking Green Lantern's hammering on Diana, kicking her ass, and we get Connor running. He goes, don't, Diana, don't. We can save her. We can, you know, Victor's the one to set cure. And she's all, save her? Like, I don't want to save her. The sword she has was the one that was in, I think, Bruce and then Shazam with the technology and magic infused what's that shit? Kryptonite into this sword, and it can pretty much take down any immortal. I think they call it the Immortal Blade, right? Connor's trying to stop Canary from killing Wonder Woman because he knows there's a cure and he can save her now, but it's too late. She's bringing the sword down. Connor, with his speed, just like his dad, the speed of light, gets in the way and takes the sword through him. He falls down bloody on top of Diana. The sword went through Connor and is now sticking Diana through her throat, and they're both down. Connor looks like he lost his life while Black Canary stands there in awe, like, can't believe in what she fucking did. And that's where this book ends here. Is Connor dead? Maybe. That sword has kryptonite in it, man. It's going to take you fucking out. So, for it to happen the way, you know, he's a hero. He's going to, if he finds that there's a cure for the people on Earth and you're trying to kill them, he's going to try to stop that. That's pretty much his dad. He's Superman. He is his father's son. And it looks like he died in doing so. We'll find out in issue 2. Absolutely recommend this, man. Go back and pick up the other deceased books. They're fucking killing. The second run blew my fucking socks off. You guys heard it here. And I hope you fucking dug it, man. So if you're into those two, don't sleep. Just continue this fucking run. I don't know how far they're going with this shit, but it's good goddamn writing. Let me see who wrote this. I'm sorry, guys. Should have had that ready for you. I know Trevor Hairsign is one of the writers, and he is the artist. He's the one that I did the original Marvel Zombies, I think. Yeah, so pick this book up. Read that shit. Tell me what you think. I hope you guys liked the review I did. I didn't want to give that last spoiler with Connor, but we don't know what's going to happen in the second book, you know. Plus, you know, when I get excited about some shit, I let everything out. My bad. I apologize. It's just how I do. Well, that's all the books I have for you guys for this week. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Hopefully you like the books I review, and hopefully you go out and get them for yourself, because they're fucking goddamn great books. So until next time, Serious Nerd, I'm out.